Welcome to Compliance Cast, presented by Kofax. Compliance is complicated, but we're here to help. This series showcases compliance experts with timely insights for finance process leaders. Listen and learn how to manage evolving global mandates while increasing productivity and competitive edge. We hope you enjoy this episode.
So this is something that perhaps, say 2 years ago, wouldn't have been on anybody's radar. But now, as you said, you mentioned the number 50 in the next, 5 years?
Yep.
If it's not on your radar now, it really, really should be, I think. And that's why I hear you say so. But help me out here, Alan. I had the impression that, because if you look at, you just said earlier, this happens primarily, or one of the reasons why it happens is because governments need money. So they try to improve the collection. I understand that maybe you can say something about that. There's quite a bit of a difference between, at least in Europe, we have visibility of that number of the money we expect to collect as a government versus what in reality we do collect. And I understand it's quite a big gap. So I suspect that these mandates, these C2Cs, try to remedy that.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't this mainly a thing of, I hope I'm not insulting anybody, but isn't this mainly a thing of, say, implementation in countries that have a slightly less strong fiscal morale? Or is this a wider trend?
Well, it's a wider trend. And of course, the VAT gap, as you refer to it, is really, I would say, the most important driver that we see being mentioned, at least by tax authorities, in order to implement systems like that. And to give you a very practical example of a country that will soon, let's say, move towards these types of controls, is Romania. Romania is known for its very high VAT cap. So it has the highest VAT cap in Europe.
That's as a percentage of its national income, right?
Absolutely. It's calculated at 35% of the overall tax revenue or VAT revenue. So you see that indeed creates a burning platform for Romania to do something to better collect that amount. And you see that they are doing that in a really big bang approach. They're implementing SAFTI, so the standard audit file for tax, which is a bit beyond, let's say, the typical CTC, because it's the entire accounting information that needs to be sent in a structured format, which is also based on an OECD model, by the way. They will also implement e-invoicing, first of all, for high-risk products. But over time, they really want to go to a full B2B e-invoicing mandate. So you see that the VAT gap is often a really important driver for countries to move into the direction of CTCs, and it has proven very very positive. If I look at, for instance, Italy is the first country in Europe that moved towards mandated electronic invoicing. They have improved their VAT collection or their VAT compliance in around 2 billion euros. So that's really an impressive figure that shows indeed that from a tax authority's point of view, let's say, the implementation is really to be called successful.
Well, so Italy managed to collect 2 billion euros in additional taxes, money that they probably wouldn't have gotten before.
Correct.
Before the mandate. And the mandate started in 2019, didn't it?
19, indeed.
Yeah. And did Italy go through any extensions? You mentioned the extension. I said something about the extension. Did Italy go through extensions?
Yeah, they did indeed. First of all, receive the confirmation of the commission that they're allowed to continue with their B2B invoicing.
Oh, we need to talk about the commission.
We need to talk about the commission, indeed. So that's the first element. Yep. And in addition to that, is that you see that the platform they use for the B2B invoicing, which is called the SDI system, is now also being used for the collection of so-called cross-border invoicing. information. So the information of the transactions where the mandate, the e-invoicing mandate, is not applicable to. So everything which is happening with tax authorities outside of Italy, let's say, that information is now also collected through the same system, that SDI system, which gives Italy really good visibility on all transactions happening in the country, but also the transactions going in and out of the country.
Okay, so that's every transaction, basically. Correct. And did I understand? So we'll talk about the commission in a second. I have so many questions now. This is why we need more than one podcast. So I asked a question earlier. Is this something that happens primarily in countries with lesser or lower? Let's describe it differently. With a bigger VAT gap as a percentage of its gross national income. That's question number one. Question number two is, do these mandates, these C2Cs, lead to simplification elsewhere, like in archiving? I know in some countries archiving is difficult.
Yep.
Does that become easier because of the C2C, or does it remain the same or get even more difficult? Sorry, these are two questions. One is, surely this must be something for countries with a big gap, basically. Yeah. And the other one is, but it must be some simplification somewhere.
Yeah, okay. I will try to answer the question separately. So first of all, on let's say the drivers and which countries can we expect to focus on these CTCs going forward? Indeed, it are those countries having or are, let's say, known to have their a very high VAT cap. I already made the example or referred to the example of Romania, but also some other countries like France, Poland are moving into the direction of the introduction of mandates.
Well, they don't have a big cap, do they?
They don't have a big they're not known to have the biggest gap in Europe, but Poland, for instance, has over time already implemented some other CTC or reporting mechanisms, which makes that this is really their end game, let's say, to also implement e-invoicing on top of the SAFTs and all the transaction-based controls they already have in place at this point in time. So I would say that, the list of countries is very long and is becoming longer and longer on a daily basis. So that's the first first response. Secondly, you asked me about the impact for businesses. Indeed, there are some simplifications that are typically linked with the introduction of CTCs. For instance, the fact that archiving from a VAT point of view can happen on the portal or the system that is being put forward by a government, which is often seen as a simplification or put forward by the authorities as a simplification. Of course, you need that archive also for bigger reasons than tax, let's say.
So it
means that where some of the items put forward by authorities as simplification measures, for instance, the fact that they will pre-complete your VAT return on the data that you submit in real time, lead, on the other hand, for businesses mostly to higher compliance costs, because they need to reconcile everything which a government receives in real time, which they pre-fill in your VAT return, versus what you in your system find as your ultimate VAT return. So I would say, the advantage of the simplifications that are put forward by authorities are not always seen as compelling by taxpayers, and that has even been calculated in a recent study that was also performed on behalf of the Commission. It has shown that also the fragmentation, so the fact that there's not one country that is implementing precisely the same.
Yeah, but we're going to get there. So they're all different, you say?
They're indeed all different. So it's not because Italy has implemented it in this way that France the next day will also use the same system and solution to implement it going forward. So it's not that they try to come up with the best practice or that they try to learn from each other. No, every country is inventing its own specific system, which means that for businesses, and especially those that are operating, I would say, in an international context, the costs of fragmentation are really, really high. So I would not say that the CTCs are for every party involved really a good news show at this point in time. From an authority's perspective, yes, you can see very positive impact to the VAT collection. And what makes it even more compelling is that the implementation costs for them, for implementing these systems, has been only calculated at a fraction of what has been achieved by implementing those. But on the other hand, the fragmentation costs for businesses are really, really high. They have been calculated again by that study to amount to 1.6 billion a year, which is really, again, a massive amount for businesses. Yeah.
So that's cost to business and, you know, affects bottom line. There's no return for it. Okay, so limited return.
However, I need to make an important caveat, and I'm sure you will otherwise also explain this in a bit, is that what that study that I was referring to has not calculated are the positive effects from, let's say, a process efficiency perspective for businesses. Because there, of course, in a system where you move to mandated electronic invoicing, depending again on the way that is being organized, it has, of course, very good effects on process efficiency, process automation. And those elements have not been calculated by that study again.
No, so I can see. Yeah, I see what you mean. But I think the story you're painting is that what's good for government isn't necessarily good for business because their objectives are so, are so different. However, it can be used as an impetus. It can be used as almost like an accelerant in digitization. But that's not going to happen by itself. You need to do something about it. The third thing I hear you say is not going to stop. It's going to get quite a bit worse. And if you weren't worried about it, you should need to start worrying about it today. And it's not just countries with weak balance sheets or weak tax income that are implementing this. And am I right to assume, Ellen, that once you see the bigger countries in Europe, and it's not just Europe, let's be clear, right? This has been going on for a while, right? This has been going on since 2012-11 in Latin America, now made its inroads into Europe. But am I right to assume that if a country like Poland, which is a substantial economy in Europe, a country like France, I hear that maybe Spain, or not maybe, Spain will go the same way. Your own country, Belgium, is debating. Denmark is. And I think very recently, Germany asked the Commission for approval. We'll get to that thing in a second, but I'm under the impression that this is simply unstoppable. This is going to be, if I summarize this, the model of the future. Mm-hmm. So this is the tax reform on indirect taxation, at least the model reform we're seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a very fair summary. On the other hand, what you see as well is that, the European Commission is also seeing this happening.
Of course,
It is also facing every country that is implementing its own variety of CTC that they put forward and that they deem to be the best fit for their country. Sorry, which means that they're also looking into, should we not ease things for businesses? And should we not come up with, let's say, an EU approach to CTCs?
Yes, of course. And that's, of course, what people are expecting when we're in Europe.
That is indeed what people are expecting. However, given the massive list that you just referred to of countries that already ask for that derogation, that are also that are already in the design phase of their future CTC model, I'm a bit afraid that maybe the Commission recommendation or proposal comes a bit late in the process.
People need to realize, for those of you who are listening, that the paper and PDF invoices in most of these regimes disappear and are replaced by an XML or a UBL or a JSON file, something structured, something you're not ready for today, either to send out or to receive. And that has, I would reckon, quite a big impact on businesses, because there's probably, from a process operational perspective, the thing that suits, that should spring into your eyes straight away, that should be visible straight away, is like, you know, what you're doing today will no longer work after the mandate. And the mandate is a flick of a switch, isn't it? It's, you know, one day the old system is okay, the next day it isn't anymore. But I think you also said something about scope. These mandates are implemented gradually or over time. So there's not, or not all of them, but some of them are big bang, others aren't.
Indeed. There's also no consistency, would say, in the way they are implemented. Some go through a voluntary phase first before an actual go live. Others do it in a phased manner, depending on, for instance, the size of the taxable person, which is, for instance, the approach that France is taking. On the other hand, it means that if you're a big supplier and you're sending invoices to a small company, that already has from the start of the mandate, that small company need to be able to receive invoices from its big supplier.
Exactly.
So in a sense, it impacts everyone as from the start.
Yeah. And again, that's a podcast in itself, is the whole situation in France, where, you know, by the 1st of July 2024, only the biggest companies in the country need to send electronic invoices, but everybody needs to be able to receive these invoices from them. So if you do business with them, you need to be ready.
Absolutely.
So the impact.
I've been talking a lot. I feel. I also want to hear a bit more about your experience and the business impact you're hearing on a daily basis from the companies you're talking to. How do you prepare your clients for everything that is changing and coming towards them?
Well, there's a lot we can do to prepare customers, where, you know, on the invoicing network, we typically, you know, take the pain away from customers to having to connect themselves to all these different platforms. Again, that's a podcast in itself, right? But we behave in that, if you was like a universal adapter. You know, you give us data, we make sure it goes to the government, and we make sure we get it from the government, and we then give it to the buyer. We'll talk about that technology at another time. But it's also really important that governments realize that, you know, just assigning or hiring any invoicing network isn't all you need to do, because there's a lot more you need to get yourself ready for. And I would say the word preparation in itself, you use the word preparation, means that you have to be quite proactive about this. You can't wait. This is the thing we tell most of our customers: do not wait until it happens, because then it will be too late. You'll be facing whatever the government wants for good reasons. You mentioned those. You know, nobody's misbehaving here. The government's got really good reasons to do this. But they want you to comply by a certain date. If you wait until that date before you do things, or just, you know, very close to that date, all you'll be able to implement is what the government wants you to do. Mm-hmm. Is that going to drive business automation? Is that going to drive supply chain automation? No, not really. So what we are telling our customers, and what we are working with our customers on, is that, how do you use these things to drive business automation, to drive supply chain automation? That means you need to respond much earlier. Mm-hmm. You need to get really proactive, centralized. You need to have a real strategy about, okay, I know it's going to happen, it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing about, you know, inevitability. You know it's going to happen. So you have a chance to prepare for it. You know, and of course, nobody knows exactly, you know, we both know a number of countries that are going to roll out. We also know that they're going to change, that these deadlines are not set in stone, that they may be pushed out, other countries will come into scope. So it's a bit of a moving target, which frankly makes it quite difficult. Now, on the one hand, you could argue that if you leave that up to somebody else to deal with that, moving target, that will help you dramatically, but you still need to have a proactive, centralized approach, a strategy to deal with whatever comes your way. The second thing I would say is, you need to make absolutely certain that you use this to your business benefit. If you don't, it'll just be, as you said, it'll be a cost. Mm-hmm. You mentioned 1.6 billion, it's probably a bit less, as you said, because of the simplification and this, but whatever comes out of this, let's say in terms of business benefit, is very much depending on how you approach it. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that if you approach it as, you know, reactively, you wait for it to happen, you only step in when you absolutely, absolutely have no other chance but doing it, it will cost businesses $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
But I think, and we've seen examples of this where companies effectively use this to drive data quality improvements, to streamline their order to cash and their procure to pay process, to create better visibility data in their own company, to take advantage of, you know, much faster payment. That, you know, there's lots of things that you can get out of it, but that means you need to prepare for it, because otherwise simply not going to happen.
Yeah. Part of that preparation, or a very important part of that preparation, and I heard you refer to it in what you mentioned before, must be the question about quality of data, linked to the fact that all these systems require you to create real-time visibility in your data by a tax authority. It must mean that indeed, a very big chunk of the projects you're focusing on with clients is really, is really focused on making sure that the data that is being out there, that customers feel safe and confident about what they're sending towards the government.
Exactly, you're right. So I think we're both saying that what's going to happen is not easy on business. This is not your core business. This is not what you do for a living. But governments have really good reasons for implementing these things. It's not going to go away. It's a fact of life. But basically, get used to it and prepare for it. Which I think is a message of, if you wish, hope. You can use this to your benefit, but you need to have a good strategy. You need to be smart about this. And that's why you can use you and us to actually really do this. And that's why you should be subscribing to this podcast. Because, we've sort of come to the end of this one. And I know once you and I get going, we could probably spend the rest of the day talking about this. We'll probably keep on doing. We'll have more episodes around this topic about e-reporting, about other types of indirect taxation like ESG, which is probably more relevant than ever, other types of tax reform, impacts on businesses, the role of Europe, macroeconomic drivers. We could probably, until my retirement, we can keep on doing this, and we probably will. So subscribe to this podcast if you want to know more. We'll absolutely also spend time on how you prepare for this, how you make good use of this. We'll use case examples of what works, what doesn't work. But for now, Ellen, I'd like to thank you very much for your time today. I think it was very insightful. Thank you for all the things that you are bringing to the table in this particular topic. And I would say to everybody, thank you so much for listening today. And again, make sure you subscribe. Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To find more episodes and to subscribe, please visit kofax.com/compliancecast.